to This Luxury Life, a podcast where we take a closer look at the finer things in life. I'm your host, Arpan Ghosh. From Michelin-starred dining to high-profile sporting events, private jets to boutique jewelry, I speak with the people who strive to bring you nothing but the very best. So join me, won't you, as we explore this luxury life. Now, typically, the podcast focuses on Dubai and the incredible lifestyle that this city has to offer. But every now and again, we like to venture out a bit beyond our borders and put the spotlight on luxury around the world. In this episode, I will be speaking with Wade Weissman, founder and president of highly renowned firm Wade Weissman Architecture. Wade is perhaps best known for his sprawling estate houses, designed in a classical and very timeless style. He's worked in projects across the United States, with offices established in Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, and Santa Barbara. And in 2018, he published a book called Heirloom Houses that highlights 15 of his most finely crafted projects. Wade is kindly joining me today from his office in Wisconsin via video conference. So welcome to the show, Wade. Good to have you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, Wade, I guess we should probably start off a little bit by talking about you and your journey as an architect. Is it something that you've always wanted to do? Is it something you were always drawn to, or something that just happened along the way?
No, I had some grooming. I had a grandparent, my grandfather, who studied to be an architect and unfortunately was never able to complete his studies because of World War II. And so he compromised his career and used his drawing skills as a draftsperson in a technical studio. But he always wanted to be an architect. And when I was a little boy, he would bring me books on great architects and great architecture. And so I grew up essentially being very interested and looking forward to the holidays where he would bring me fresh books that I could sink my teeth in.
Wow, fantastic. And that just kind of went along over time, I guess.
It did. You know, I started thinking I always wanted to be an architect. I was very, as a little boy, we had a little hobby farm, and I would go into the barns and I would build forts, and I would go into the woods and I would, you know, pretend that I was a pioneer and build little log structures and things from fallen trees. And I've always really got into building ever since I was a kid. And it just kind of manifested itself in through my high school years, where I started exploring a little bit more about what it would be like to take an architecture career path and what kind of education I would have and the skills I would need to incorporate into building the right sort of pathway to becoming an architect. I didn't know what kind of architect I wanted to be. I ended up falling into being in a more of the luxury residential realm. But at the time, I just really wanted to placemake and create vision.
All right. What was your first professional project?
It was a residence, actually. I was working as a summer intern for a commercial residential firm or a commercial firm in Wisconsin. And it was during one of my was a summertime position, and there was a favor project that came into the office, which was, you know, rehabbing an old historic residence that had 10 bedrooms on a beautiful lake outside of Milwaukee. And it was for a Chicago client, and nobody seemed to want to do this job in the office. And here I was, basically an intern, and I was so excited about the opportunity and going out to the job site and meeting with the contractors and, you know, being able to sort of create this luxury residence. But that was my first taste.
Oh, wow. And then I guess it's just never let go of you since then, did it?
Yes, I was pretty much hooked.
Right. Now, of course, you're best known for kind of a very, very classical sense of, you know, estate type homes. That's kind of one of your signature styles. What inspired that particular style? What inspired you to take up that particular style?
I had an interesting opportunity that came up for me where one of my I had a couple of business partners early on in my business sort of history. Mm-hmm. And one of the business partners was a professional horse trainer. And she introduced me to a client that was looking to expand a farm in Wellington, Florida, where, you know, you've got, you know, those sort of winter equestrian festival. And so I went down to Florida and, you know, met with her and met with the contractor. And we designed, you know, an equestrian facility, which consisted of, you know, a beautiful stable, exercise, sand ring, paddocks, you know, kind of a master plan for a little farm that you kind of see dotted around that landscape. Mm-hmm. In doing so, I got introduced to essentially a whole sort of subculture of architecture that I really kind of fell in love with. It sort of fit my whole sort of dream, which was, you know, really creating these heirloom type estates. Which, you know, in sort of the luxury brand world that, you know, we dwell in, that equestrian interests are a big part of that. And so it was a really exciting opportunity for me. And although it was essentially, you know, building more utility buildings, mm-hmm. those utility buildings have an opportunity to speak very loudly about the dedication to this particular sport. And the traditions in that subculture, which is really remarkable. There's a whole lot of pageantry, and it's really a wonderful sort of piece of culture to get immersed into. And then commissions started coming through that connection, which was really interesting.
All right. Did you end up developing an interest in equestrian sports yourself?
I did. It was really wonderful to sort of see how, you know, the hunting and jumping and dressage, you know, sort of cultures, you know, sort of intermixed. The pageantry of Grand Prix and, you know, the sort of village of little boutiques that are set up to service, you know, the clientele, you know, the lifestyle and the sort of buildup every week to getting to these different Grand Prix circuits were pretty amazing. And then to learn about, you know, the different horse shows, you know, that people try to qualify to get into around the country and in all of North America, actually, from, you know, Canada all the way down to Mexico. It's really interesting. And I enjoyed really being a part of that. Fun group of people, clearly love of, you know, animals and this sort of sporting life, things that are pretty timeless. And in that timelessness is where I found my niche marketplace to create architecture that seemed genteel and appropriate for the class of the individuals that were involved in this sport. So that really felt very instinctive to me.
And now, from what I've read, you're known as a bit of a storyteller in terms of your architecture. You know, you really want your buildings to tell a story. I guess, how do you go about conceiving of that story? I'm sure some of it is guided by what your client's requirements are, what their vision is, but then how do you go about putting that together and say, well, this is what I want it to be?
Well, you know, that's where my sort of love of history comes in.
All right.
You know, you look at where, you know, these individual locations are, and the traditions of architecture that have taken place in those various areas. And, you know, there's a, you know, an architectural flavor that was very distinct more historically than today, where, you know, the sort of more abstract, more contemporary approaches to design kind of fit, you know, almost any kind of, you know, site in any location. But, you know, in one particular case, you're designing something in South Florida, and there's a tradition of South Florida. You know, how did some of these original sort of, you know, developments take place? And mm-hmm. as Florida was being cultivated, and they were bringing down, you know, all the traditions from New York or Pennsylvania or the Middle Atlantic, you know, they bring down some of their traditions. But they, you know, were essentially specifically building in this new environment where you have a lot of rain in the winter and you have, you know, hurricanes that you have to contend with. But you have, you know, the warm, humid conditions that are there. And there's a tradition of architectural design that is there in South Florida, as opposed to, you know, Central Tennessee, where, you know, there's a completely different kind of architecture. And so I kind of start there. I look to see where these buildings are going to be located, what their traditions, and what are some of the highlights of the building arts that would have been found in those buildings that are indigenous. And then that kind of inspires me to take it to the next level.
Wow, that sounds like a really, really fascinating process to dive, you know, to dive deep into the history of the area, of the locality, to learn, basically to immerse yourself in the place that you're building. I think that would result in a more well-designed, well-rounded structure just because of just the level of thought you put into it. So that is fascinating stuff. I love that.
It's fascinating to me. I think what I really, really love is that it's, you get to work in different environments, you get new stimulus, right? So you, you know, it requires you not just to sort of say, I could, you know, if you work in the same environment all the time, after a while, you kind of say, okay, well, you know, these are the rules, here's the traditions. But what I love about this is that it teaches me something that I can cross-pollinate into other areas, but flavor them a little differently. And that's where you get these really interesting sort of hybrid design aesthetics, you know, and, you know, you think about it, like, you know, when British colony was, you know, essentially going into the British West Indies and they were cultivating, you know, they brought about a tradition of architecture with them culturally, but it was tailored to this unique environment. And so this, you know, ability to have transparency and the heat and the louvers and all these things, and this sort of, you know, this different aesthetic, this sort of hybrid aesthetic, which I think is really exciting. And I love learning about stuff like that.
Oh, wow. We could do a whole podcast just on this, honestly. This is, history is one of my interests as well. And I guess I haven't really gone so much into the history of architecture, but it just sounds so, so fascinating. So, you know, we could go on with this we could do an hour long show on this alone. but in the interest of maybe our listeners who are maybe not quite so historically inclined, we'll move on to the next thing, which is what is one of the toughest challenges that you faced in your career in terms of, you know, coming up with a design or possibly dealing with a difficult client demand or just finding yourself in a project where you think, well, this is going to be a lot more work than I thought?
You know, as you go through your career, you know, you have certain projects that you take on that are benchmark. They're projects that might further you into, you know, a whole threshold of you know, house size or of craftsmanship level, whatever those things are. And, you know, you have to build trust in it. You know, each one you kind of pursue and push yourself a little bit further. And some of those challenges then are like you're learning as you're going, as well as being looked at as being an expert. And I think when I look back historically, there were some benchmark projects that I worked on. Sometimes I think that there can be challenges inherent with a client having a high level of expectation and craftsmanship with a very, you know, sort of guarded way of holding on to the resources that it takes to actually get there. And I'm trying to be very politically correct in this, but, you know, that is really, that's always to bridge that gap is always a challenge, to be able to try to, you know, illustrate to somebody that, you know, their expectations are wonderful and that you can deliver and exceed their expectations, but that they to be realistic about the resources that it's going to take. And I think the most challenging is if someone is essentially, you know, not trusting to begin with, they think you're just trying to take them down the path to get a bigger commission or something. And it's really not the case. You know, craftsmanship is a luxury in itself. Mm-hmm. And being able to resolve and embrace, you know, the client's, you know, demands and filter it, you know, through appropriateness and beauty, and make it look authentic, is a challenge. And it does take a lot of time, and it does take a lot of coordination with lots of people, because, you know, I may have a vision, but to carry that vision out, to produce a set of documents, to manifest yourself, you know, and learn from the craftspeople that are going to be essentially building this, you have to be able to coordinate. And those efforts take a lot of time. They just do. And sometimes people don't think that it should take that much time. But honestly, to do a thorough job and to be responsible and professional, you really have to put the effort into it.
Right, of course. Now, I guess another thing I wanted to touch upon is the fact that you know, contemporary seems to be one of the major buzzwords in architecture and interior design. Certainly here in Dubai, we've seen a huge surge in contemporary style homes. Many of the newer homes and communities that are coming up, they have that, you know, that very sleek, all glass, you know, sharp planes kind of look. Does a trend like this, or do these kinds of growing trends have any impact on your own approach to design, or the way you look at building a home?
Well, I love modern contemporary architecture, mm-hmm. always have. And I went to the University of Pennsylvania to get my master's degree. And, you know, that program was sort of based on the teachings of Louis Kahn. And Louis Kahn had, you know, really was a master mid-century modern architect. But his sort of flavor of modern architecture, was very sophisticated. And, you know, there was a lot of structural ingenuity. There was an enormous amount of understanding historic precedent and the modern forms that he created out of being inspired by traditional architecture forms in various cultures from around the world that he visited, you know, was really fascinating as a student. And so I feel like most of the work that we do, we examine it from a very sort of contemporary or modern sort of conceptual place. You know, the connection to the outside, the ongoing process of dissolving boundaries, you know, the magnificent vistas that you have between inside and outside, the view orientation, things like that. I always feel like all of our sort of architecture is sort of filtered, most of our design solutions are filtered through that process. Where I begin to sort of divert at that point is that I do believe that, to me, craftsmanship is and anonymity are two things that I find to be very high virtues in architecture design as an aesthetic sort of departure. And so from my perspective, contemporary modern architecture sort of qualifies when it's executed with incredible precision. The simplest things are the hardest things to achieve, and that's one of the beauties of modern and contemporary design. Where I lose it is when it becomes cold, and it doesn't live well, and it doesn't gather people well, and it doesn't leave an imprint, or it lacks any kind of, you know, sort of like personal history of the individual that it's trying to represent, because it could be an office, it could be a waiting room of a, you know, of a corporate, you know, sort of high rise. Is it really a living room, you know, and who's living in it? that's where I begin to sort of lose my interest in that sort of aesthetic of architecture. And in projects where a client is looking for something, I would say that has that clean, sort of powerful sort of feeling of space and openness, is to then create a counterpoint to that. Cozy nooks, a place to little gather, a niche someplace that has a scale that feels very human. And I think those juxtapositions help, you know, make both even better.
Right. Right. I definitely agree with that. Now, is this something that that you see becoming more prevalent, the idea of the kind of more colder, mechanical looking spaces? Is that maybe becoming more of a prevailing trend than, you know, homes that you say that are that use the space well, that give it that sense of warmth?
Wow, that, yes. So it's interesting because construction is expensive and the cost of construction doesn't seem to ever go down. And therefore, the amount of square footage that one needs in order to have a very sort of open, you know, modern aesthetic, that alone has sort of a luxury benchmark associated with it. Right. Because you need enough square footage in order to pull that off. We're also, as humans, we're kind of pack rats. You know what I mean? You know, I can tell you that just, you know, even with the relative, you know, the sort of the beautiful sort of, you know, branding that you find in luxury garments and things, you know, we end up with projects that have enormous sort of requirements for his and hers closets. Right. Oh, and dressing rooms and things. You know, so there's always a need for storage and a need to put things in to be able to sort of the outfitting of being a human being today, you need a lot of sort of space for that, just from a utility standpoint. I don't know if that aesthetic will be it. I mean, I think that aesthetic, when it's reduced to a much more size restrictive sort of, you know, footprint, it has a very different impact. And I feel like it's less successful. I think that when you walk into a luxury penthouse and it's just sprawling and there's a huge outdoor deck and terrace and the walls dissolve and a 30-foot wall of glass retracts and, you know, wow. I mean, just the amazement of that is blow away, you know. They're incredible, just aesthetic sort of like, oh, wow, this is incredible, you know, just this amount of space. But, you know, if you were to put that in Manhattan and it was in a, you know, 400 square foot footprint, I think you would, you know, the impact of the sofa you would need for a space like that is slightly diminished when it's squished into an 8x10 space.
It's a very fair point. I guess kind of keeping with this topic, in a way, are there any like other major trends that you've noticed that are maybe kind of changing the overall American landscape? I mean, you've worked everywhere from the East Coast across to the West Coast, and you've kind of seen a little bit of everywhere in your work. Do you see any like major shifts happening in terms of architecture over the next, you know, 10, 15 years or beyond even?
I see that outdoor space is kind of at a premium and very precious. And, you know, these sort of genteel sort of, you know, sprawling, you know, country estates and things and farms and things that, they, you know, those were sort of like, you know, you could sort of take that for granted, you know, these, when I was a kid growing up, you know, in the Midwest, you know, there were the sort of sprawling ranch homes that you found from post-war America that would be on the streets where there was just this enormous amount. I mean, the footprint of these houses would be over 100 feet long, you know, on a 2-acre lot or something. And, you know, think about that. The amount of linear footage of asphalt and city services and sewer lines and utilities to be able to just service just a few lots on a long street, that's kind of going by the wayside. I mean, I think we as a culture are sort of trying to become more green. I think we are as a culture are essentially trying to be more environmentally sensitive. You know, we no longer take for granted that land and developable land is something that can just go on and on forever. And so, you know, what we're doing now is I think we're embracing density. We're embracing walking again. We're embracing washing dishes rather than throwing out plastic cups. You know, we're doing what Europe has done for many, 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 many decades, you know. And the American way of life, you know, which was sort of the target and the world was sort of, you know, sort of drawn to, is a little bit of a backlash now. You know, it's sort of saying, hey, you know, it's not so green. You're not doing so many good things for the environment. You're polluting, you're oversprawling, you're, you know, creating too much traffic, you're requiring vehicles, I think we're kind of taking a big step back from a big picture. And I think the design aesthetics that are essentially coming along with it are just evolving. I think some of the products that we're going to be using are just evolving. I think you're going to see, you know, solar panels on every single roof tile in the next 10 years. You know, I think that there are so many exciting things that are happening because of our reevaluation of our sort of sprawling American culture, you know, pulling back some and being a little more sensitive and making our footprint a little smaller is really exciting. And I think there's a whole lot of opportunity in the product design realm and, you know, new technologies. I think we're just scratching the surface of that, actually.
Right. Oh, yeah. I think it'll be very, very exciting to see kind of the more eco-friendly, environmentally conscious homes of the future and the sort of innovations that come in to, you know, service that that way of living. That will be quite something to watch. Now, across the world, are there any cities that you think, you know, boy, I'd like to build a home there or do a project over there? Any with a particular architectural sensibility that you think is, you know, is of interest to you?
You know, almost... almost every like sort of marketplace where, you know, I'm just sort of fascinated. I'm fascinated by Dubai and I'm fascinated by, you know, the East. You know, I find the more exposure that we have to the emerging markets and the cultures that, you know, are sort of embracing the new sort of direction that's taking place, you know, with some of the, you know, incredible sort of financial success that has been coming out of these emerging markets. You know, I would love to, you know, design in other cultures. You know, I did a project a few years ago in Germany, and so it was wonderful to work in Europe. And then a few years later, I had a designer friend of mine ask me if I'd be interested in doing a project outside of Moscow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in Moscow, you know, is you know, a very interesting sort of, you know, culture. Mm-hmm. And because there's an enormous amount of tradition, but, you know, clearly with the fall of communism, you know, and the sort of injection of a business and the success of business and you're now getting an opportunity to see, you know, some pretty incredible wealth being amassed. And then, you know, essentially the residences and some of the, you know, personal sort of, you know, pleasure playgrounds that, you know, you've seen that these individuals want are pretty exciting because, you know, there's a lot of resources that, you know, they can essentially incorporate. But the program was really fascinating because, you know, their healthcare system, you know, also, you know, is not as reliable, let's say. And so therefore, you know, in the program were surgical suites. And, you know, being able to accommodate, you know, having, you know, physicians on staff 24/7, you know, the amount of people that help serve these individuals from the chefs all the way to the groundskeepers, you know, human resources are fairly inexpensive, but the accommodation of 60 bedrooms, you know, it's pretty interesting programmatically because it's, you know, more of a hotel kind of program. Because you're incorporating so many other aspects that we take for granted, you know, in our sort of domestic culture here. So I'm fascinated. I hope I do get the opportunity for someone to come along and say, wow, I would love for you to design me a classically inspired, you know, sort of, you know, palace somewhere. I would love to get into that. It would be a blast. Right, well,
that's definitely something to send to our clients. Hopefully we can get a Wade Weissman home here in Dubai. That would be fantastic.
I would love that. I think it would be incredible to immerse myself in the culture too. One of the cool things about having gone in this sort of direction of architecture and design is that we have had a chance to work in other environments. And each time you get a chance to travel, you get an opportunity to expose yourself to something really fascinating. You learn, you know, just more and more and more about the availability of craftspeople and materials and options that you may not have ever had a chance to see before.
Right. That is, I mean, obviously if you're coming here, there'll definitely be so much for you to discover and explore. And yeah, I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Just watching them build the islands blew me away.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Wade. I think that's pretty much all we have time for. Though, before I let you go and you get on with the rest of your day, there is a little quick fire Q&A that I do with all of my guests.
So, okay.
Would you be ready for that?
Sure. I'll give it my best shot.
All right. So, your favorite cuisine?
Thai.
Thai, yeah. Very good choice. Favorite book?
So, Devil in the White City, I think, is one of those, is a book that just sort of etched in my brain. You know, there's that moment in time, the Chicago World's Fair, the politics, there was a lot to it, even though, it's sort of partially based in reality and partially not. It's very interesting, intriguing, intriguing book.
I guess are you generally a fan of historical fiction?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Well, I'll have to pick up some recommendations from you. Now, if you could live in any city in the world, not just design buildings there, but find your own home without any restrictions at all in terms of, you know, budget, location, what have you, where would that be?
Either Paris or Florence.
And would that be more in the kind of in the city center or countryside?
Well, in Florence, you can't help but look up at the hillside and see those fabulous Italian villas. Just to be able to walk down into the center of Florence, daily to go to the market. And it's remarkable. And the whole time I'm there, I'm just like, wow, I wonder what it'd be like to live here. And in Paris, I think it's just the opposite. I think, you know, having one of those sort of fabulous sort of Beaux-Arts, you know, apartments with the 16-foot ceilings and all the plastic trim and the French boiserie. There's just something about living at a wedding cake that I think I would absolutely love.
What has been a favorite project of yours that you've done?
We just completed a project in Southern Ohio, actually, on a gorgeous piece of property with a incredible team. And it was about 4 years in the making. It was absolutely one of the most rewarding projects. And from an achievement standpoint, I haven't been able to publish this property, this project, we worked with, you know, a fabulous team. And I think that whole experience was just something where, you know, every sort of opportunity where we didn't want to leave anything, you know, undeveloped, unresolved, and looked for every opportunity to sort of connect it. We had an extraordinary construction team, the general contractor, all the craftspeople, and it was really kind of the best of the best of everything. And the designers, when they installed the property, the project at the end, it was like watching. It was like watching the finest artisans sort of complete their tasks, and that was very rewarding. It was an incredible opportunity, and the fact that it was, you know, really, I mean, when you think about, you know, the sort of signature places you would expect a project of that magnitude to occur, oh, Southern Ohio wouldn't be one that you would expect, but it was incredible.
Oh, wonderful. That's wonderful. What is the last place that you've traveled?
I was in London for the Design Leadership Conference in November. And it was really an amazing. It was my first time, and they had been able to arrange, you know, dinners and gatherings and tours and places that you don't get to see, including a champagne reception in Kensington Palace, another one in Blenheim Palace. And, you know, you just don't get to, you don't get to see those things. Those are, you know, places that you have to be invited, and to the normal person, an invitation is pretty unlikely. So as a group like that, with having that sort of stature, the doors that they were able to open was just incredible. What a wonderful experience.
Oh, fantastic. The three things that you never leave home without.
My sketchbook, my favorite pens, and my headphones and music.
Ah, I think we're somewhat kindred spirits in that respect. I would think as a bit more of an amateur artist than a draftsman, I have pretty much the same list of things: sketchbook, pens, headphones. So, someone that you would want to trade places with for a day?
That's a great question. Who would I like to trade places with for a day? I don't know if I could answer that. I think if I could answer that, you know what? I think it would be easy. In my profession, I think I would love to trade places for a day with Robert Stern. I would love to see, you know, I would love to feel what it's like to have created and contributed to the profession to such a great degree, and to the culture of design in the city of New York, with which he has, you know, created such incredible documentation. The books that he's done are extraordinary. And I think I'd love to feel what it would be like to have had that achievement and stature.
Oh, that is a great response. And I think that's a fitting end for the quickfire. So thank you for that. And thank you again for your time, Whit. I do appreciate it. It's really good to meet you and to learn so much about your process and the work that you've done. And hopefully we'll catch you again sometime soon, maybe talking about another great house, possibly your first the Dubai house, even.
Be fantastic. And I hope we get to pass cross in person.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you again, Wade, and have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
And that is it for the show. Thank you very much for listening. To stay up to date with all the latest episodes of This Luxury Life, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or any of your favorite podcast listening platforms. Please do follow us on social media as well. And if you want to view some of the world's finest homes where you can enjoy an incredible lifestyle, visit us on luxuryproperty.com. Join me again next time as I explore another facet of this incredible luxury life.